FM in Fairbanks. This Thursday evening on KUIC, we have a special treat for you. It starts at 7 o'clock with Secrets of the Great Pyramids, a different kind of documentary from the early days of KUAC about 10 years ago. Then at 8:30 Thursday evening, a radio dramatization of Something Wicked This Way Comes, written by Ray Bradbury and narrated by Orson Welles. That all takes place Thursday evening, right here on your public radio station in Alaska's interior. It's now 7 o'clock and time for Home Fires Radio Show with Patty Kostelic.
Welcome to Home Fires Radio Show. I'm Patty Kostelic, your host this evening. In the studio with me are some women who very modestly describe themselves as retired teachers. Rosamond Weller, the new Weller School out on Chena Hot Springs Road is named after her. She arrived in Fairbanks September of 1933.
Hi.
And also is Ellen Witcher. A retired teacher. She came originally to Fairbanks with the Red Cross in 1949.
Yes.
She calls herself, compared to Rosamond, a newcomer. And Sue Ann Bowling, who really is a recent arrival, 1963. She's an assistant professor of geophysics and a meteorologist, and her specialty is Fairbanks weather. I think you can probably tell, from my last guest at least, that we're going to talk about winter weather. In this past week, when I've been trying to find guests and trying to get some material together to talk about winter weather, I've only talked to one person who said, it's bad enough that we have to live through it. I don't want to talk about it. Everybody else has wanted to talk about it a lot. Although my guests in the studio, other than Sue Ann Bowling, don't consider themselves experts. But you have lived through a few winters, haven't you?
Yes.
Rosamond has been telling me that you do remember your first winter, which was 1933. Should we have you tell us what the statistics were in 33?
I really prefer to have people tell me how they remember it first, because
okay.
One of the things I'm interested in doing is trying to figure out what it is that makes winters remembered as severe or warm.
Okay. Rosamond's going to tell us what she remembers of the winter of 33.
It was extremely cold, and I wondered why I was here. I was on campus, and for in January and February, it was about 60 below for 2 weeks, and we didn't go out very much, and I was fortunate to live in a place where I could go under the ground and through a black tunnel to get over to the main building.
Okay, you told me at first you had a little cabin in the fall that who provided that for you?
Well, my brother and a friend of his had this cabin in town, and I thought, I was thrilled to be in a log cabin in Alaska. Wonderful. But after the temperature dropped a little bit, I wanted to find out if I could come on campus so I wouldn't have to ride the bus out here.
And where did you move into on campus?
I moved into George and Laverne Keyes. I had known Mrs. Keyes, or I had met her before she came up to be Dr. Bunnell's secretary, and she was also the registrar. And they had a little, just a small apartment over the power plant. George was in charge of that, and he couldn't sleep at night over all his machinery. So they had a room in the main building where they went over to sleep at night. So I slept in their little bedroom upstairs.
Sounds like the warmest place in town.
Yeah, it was.
From the coldest to the warmest.
Yes. My brother was hauling coal, and he and the fellows would be out there in 60 below zero and shoveling that coal in, and I just felt so sorry for them.
I'm surprised it shoveled. Okay. Yeah. Sue Ann, what was it like?
Well, it was, in fact, one of the colder winters. The December was about 27 below, and that January was 31.2 below, making it, I think there's only about 4 months in the entire Fairbanks record going back to about 1904 that have been below minus 30 as the monthly mean temperature. So it's was certainly a cold winter.
Okay, the mean being the average between the highest and the lowest for the day.
Right, and then averaged over the whole month.
And then averaged over the whole month. So that meant that there were some really low spiking temperatures.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm sorry I don't have the daily temperatures for that year with me.
But I can remember when they would be giving the temperature. Well, the lowest was in December or January on this particular day. For a long time.
There was a 66 below somewhere around then.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Amazing. This program is not just a composite of what we have to say in the studio here. It's also what the listeners have to say. And not just your questions, but also your remembrances and your knowledge of the issues that we're going to discuss through the next few weeks. The number in the studio is 474-5044, and every one of you out there listening has your own special expertise on winters you've lived through and things you've done. So please don't leave us by ourselves here. This will only be a successful program if we get a lot of audience participation. And so our number again is 474-5044, and please call with your favorite or least favorite winter stories, as the case may be. I think we have a sort of perverse pleasure in the amount of winters we've suffered through things we've done. So let's talk about snowfall for a little bit. Do we have a lot of snowfall here? Ellen is involved with Ski Land, and so she has a special interest in snow.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah. You're a good skier? How long have you been skiing?
Oh, no, I'm not a good skier. I've been skiing quite a while, 15, 20 years, don't know.
You said that Rosamond introduced the ski program into the schools. When was that? What year was that?
I'm not sure just what year it was, but it was in the 30s. Chuck Hoyt, I talked with him about it, see if we could start a ski school. And he was the sports editor of the News Miner, and the News Miner helped by furnishing a bus transportation out here. And we were over just, well, beyond where the Patty Building is for a long time. We skied over there. And members of that ski club at that time did the teaching. Mm-hmm. And we would bring the children out on the bus. And then the last year we came out, we were permitted to ski in front of the Eielson Building, which was wonderful. It was nice and smooth, mm-hmm. No rocks there, no brush to clean up.
Where was your school at the time?
There was just the one school, main school then.
And where was it located?
On Cushman. That's the building that
It's the administration office.
Building.
Central office. That's the name. Yeah. Okay. But that was downhill skiing, and then cross country. All the schools. I think maybe Daryl and Merritt started cross country, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
When she was at our at
but
Hunter.
At that time, we had cross country races. You know. In fact, we raced over there by the where the museum is now, and we'd bring them out here and race, and we'd race down the hill.
Did you have a lot of snow when you first started this ski program?
Oh, yes, quite a bit.
Never ran out?
The biggest problem was when the temperature got too cold, was letting everybody know, you know, calling on the radio, telling them that it would be too cold for the buses to go out, and so we wouldn't have skiing that
big disappointment.
Yeah, right. It was.
What temperature did you decide the cutoff
was? 20 below.
20 below was too cold for skiing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how long have you been skiing out in the area that you're involved with in Ski Land?
Since 61.
Mm-hmm. And you
we skied at Cleary Summit too, which is just down the road from Ski Land.
You said you remember some winters where there wasn't enough snow?
Not much.
No?
Or when we started late. I mean, it's nice to start skiing. And, well, for instance, right now people say, when are you going to open? Well, just it's about 4 inches there now. You know, it takes a lot more to get a good base. But I remember one year we didn't, seems to me it was January before we opened, another time December. Last year it was early November.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember. My yard was...
And then I know one year it must have been October because I was skiing at Cleary. That's before Ski Land had opened, and that was the only time I had an injury, a hit and runner. But that was in October then, so there must have been quite a bit of snow. That would have been in 60. What does your book say?
Well, let's see here. 60? You must have had more. Are you sure it wasn't 61?
Mm-mm. 60.
60 just had less than 4 inches of snow by the end of October. And 61 had 24.
Really? Well, maybe I have the wrong year.
That's possible.
It was certainly more than 4 inches.
Of course, could have been something where it was rain low down and snow up on the summit.
Ah, maybe that was.
Because right now we in fact don't have much snow in town. But when I look out at Murphy Dome beyond the university,
oh yes,
clear
it's
today.
Different when you get up a little higher.
What is our average snowfall?
Around 60 inches, 5 feet. Now, of course, there's never that much on the ground because it settles. But if you add up all the little bits that they measure after they've swept a board off and just measured what came down and was nice and fresh and fluffy, that's about what it adds up to.
Mm-hmm. And then it settles because moisture...
Well, some of it evaporates, but mostly it just gets denser. It settles under its own weight.
That's the most amazing thing to me when I came. We have a sort of 2x4 rail along our porch, and that the snow sometimes is 6 inches high on that slanted 2x4, and that there isn't any breeze to push it off. It's amazing. You see fence posts out in the fields with 6 inches of snow sitting up.
Or wires even sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, on the lines. Do you think there's anything... I have a book here that talks about some forecasting signs, signs that you can tell from animals or plants what kind of a winter it's going to be. Some examples are the sort of psychic squirrel theory, that squirrels begin gathering nuts early, middle, or late September. Well, of course, in Alaska, that would be way too late. Forget it. That their tails grow bushier, that the fur on or hair on animals grows thicker, that animals grow a short, fuzzy coat under their regular one, that birds eat up all their food early. Another one is carrots by plants. They predict bad winters if carrots grow deeper. I would say that would probably depend on how well you till your soil, wouldn't you?
And the variety of carrots.
Exactly. Onions grow more layers. They have one here. Trees are laden with green leaves late in the fall. That was a very imaginative one. Bark on trees is thicker. The tree bark is heaviest on the north side.
These are all the same. I thought that was moss.
Leaves shed before they turn. Well, that's when you get an ice storm before in August, you know. The dark green, they say here, the darker green the grass is during the summer, the harder the winter. Does that seem like?
It's just
don't
what
see
kind
any
of
connection really on any of those.
Now, come on, audience. 474-5044. I know I have talked to a lot of you during the week, and these are things that you have told me. Now, don't make me out to be a fool here now that we're on the radio. These are things that I was hearing all week long. No? We don't believe them in the studio, but I know some of you do. So please call me 474-5044 and tell me why you think that these things are true. In the Foxfire series, there was great belief in the woolly worm being an indicator of how...
Oh, I've heard about caterpillars growing a heavier coat or something.
But they don't go through the winter as caterpillars.
No, I know, but that's what I said. Let me see now.
Why would that be? No one has any guesses. Come on, audience. 474-5044. I read a really amusing letter in the Newsminer. Did you read this letter? No. A man named Jack Fowler wrote into the Newsminer that it isn't just the country dwellers who have beavers and muskrats and woolly worms to look at who can predict what kind of a bad weather we're going to have this winter. He says, one might think that such weather signs are available only to the rural resident, but nature has provided urban dwellers, too, with such predictors. In Fairbanks, the end of summer and the imminent onset of freeze-up has long been heralded by the appearance of pits in the streets. Driven by some mysterious instinct, Hordes of state and municipal employees, utility workers, and private contractors appear in the waning days of summer to excavate great trenches and disrupt traffic. The purpose of this burrowing is still one of the unsolved mysteries of the subarctic, but no doubt it is connected, as most such instinctive drives are, with the survival of the species. This year, as all residents of Fairbanks must be aware, the fossorial activity man has been on an unprecedented scale and continues even after the first snowfall. The implication to the thoughtful observer of nature are clear. It's going to be a hard winter. Respectfully, Jack Fowler. We have a caller. Maybe it's Jack Fowler. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Sam Stoker, and I have a question, I think, for Sue Ann Boland.
Okay.
We mentioned, or you mentioned earlier, that there were a number of correlations, possibly, between winter fur growth on mammals and possible winter temperature. Do you feel that there is any actual correlation between those two things?
I've never seen any evidence for any correlation. The only correlation I have been able to find is that if you have heavy snow early in the winter, usually you'll get quite a bit of cold weather later in the winter. And that broke down last year.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too, that the green leaves on the trees theory probably came from the winter of 69-70, when, in fact, the leaves froze on the trees about the 1st of October, and they never left. They never fell.
Right, but 69-70 was a very warm winter.
Not where I lived.
It was up here.
Where were you living then?
No, 68-69.
68-69.
Okay, that one was cold.
Yeah. That one was cold. How? What was the average, the mean temperature that year?
60? Well,
it was the second coldest winter in the last 40 years.
Yeah, I know. I was living at Creamer's Dairy then, and it got 72 below there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it gets quite a bit colder there than it does downtown.
Right.
Yeah, that is amazing to me. We live out by the airport, and just as you approach the river, the pavement changes at this time of year when it's sort of marginal temperatures between freezing and not. There's one part of the pavement that's dry or wet, depending on whether it's raining or not, and then the rest is ice, and it's a real obvious transition, just like a line.
Well, it's hard to be sure without seeing it, whether it's a local climatic effect or whether there is some sort of a installation under the road which is generating heat. A sewer line or something.
Mole.
A mole.
No, it's a real climatic effect. Apparently what you get is cold air spilling down on Chena Ridge.
Well, this is a warm-up region that she seems to be talking about.
No, I'm talking about as you get by the river it's colder.
Oh, yes. Yes,
it's frozen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just cold air drainage.
Cold air drainage coming off the ridge?
Right. It tends to follow the lowest lying areas just like water does.
We can tell that effect in Fairbanks really clearly when the gardeners compare notes about the first frost. I say, it froze last night, and people say, it did not. I say, what do you mean? And you go into this big discussion about who lost the tops of their zucchinis and so on and so forth. And, of course, up on the hills, that's obvious. But even within town, a few blocks difference can...
Well, I have also often thought that a good way of surveying the microclimate around here would simply be to pass out large numbers of seeds for nasturtiums, tomatoes, miracles, things with various frost sensitivity, and then record when they were killed at different places.
That's an excellent thing. I wonder if you can get a grant for that. Okay, anything else? No. Okay, our phone lines are free, 474-5044. Any other theories or stories about winter that you would like to share with us? I was down in the archives today, and I really didn't get very far, because what happened is I was looking at some of the transcripts of tapes that have been done for oral histories, and I was going to try and be very clear-minded and just look for weather clues, but in fact I started reading about Charlie Creamer's cow herds and so on and so forth, so I got hopelessly lost. But they someone was talking about an occupation that young schoolboys had of cutting ice, because that was a time when you didn't have to buy the water, which normally people bought their water in town. Is that right?
Yes.
And then young schoolboys cut ice and delivered it to people's houses, and then you brought it in and melted it?
Well, when I came, there was a man who made a business of it. But I guess there was a man who's, and his son, his name was Smith. I can't remember the first name, but I know that they delivered ice to the different people around town.
Mm-hmm. And then you could have that nice soft water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
oh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice soft water without all the iron that we have sometimes. Okay, I have a caller here. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about some of the curiosities of the weather, and I'm a short-timer here. It's closing in on 24 years, so that makes me a short-timer. But talking about some of the curiosities and living in places that were relatively remote in 1961, say the corner of what is now Geist and University, which was a... Mm-hmm. By then, it was a two-lane road. You could cross over the ice. But hearing a conversation from the corner of... Wolf Run and Geist and University, and hearing the conversation and trying to pin down where it was coming from, and realizing that it was coming from people who were standing at the corner of College Road and University. And in that absolutely dead, clear, still air, which was 63 degrees below zero, and the sun shining brightly, and no ice fog, that's one of the curiosities about very, very cold weather. I'm wondering if anybody else has ever had those experiences. And I would like to have Sue Ann talk about that winter of 68-69. It was, in fact, about the coldest winter in 40 years, but remembering the following spring, where the majority of the snow on the ground had not melted, but simply sublimated into the air by about the middle part of April, and was one of the driest springs and summers we've ever had. So anybody might want to comment on that kind of variation in the weather.
Well, you do get a lot of variation up here. I've done some plots where I've done the number of days at each temperature range for each of about 25 winters, and there are no two that look alike. So there's no such thing as a normal winter up here. 68-69 was one of the coldest winters.
Strange.
Yeah, there are so many different ways of classifying winters. It happens to be the coldest in the last 40 years on the basis of how many days below minus 40.
Uh-huh.
But it's only the second coldest in terms of the overall average temperature for the winter.
That's right. And recall that the winter before, I recall, because we were trying to put in underground wiring, which was at that time one of those newfangled kinds of things, and we were stringing underground wiring through a pipe. We were out there chopping the ground, which was solidly frozen at Thanksgiving. It was 45, 50 below the week before Thanksgiving, and by the 18th of December, freezing rain, 33 above in Muskox.
Huh.
And I mean simply 2 inches of clear ice on everything. And by that following January, it wasn't too bad, but the following year it was something like 60 degrees, 70 degrees below that. But the thing I wonder if Annabeth remembers is when you're out in Fairbanks and still in some of the more peripheral areas, is that when it's extremely cold, how clearly sound is transmitted. Mm-hmm. That you can hear ordinary conversations a quarter of a mile away with absolute clarity. And it's a spooky kind of thing because you have no idea of where the noise is coming from, and you can hear the words, mm-hmm. and you can hear people walking.
Yes.
A quarter of a mile
away.
Yes.
I believe that's associated with the temperature inversion.
Well,
it actually
bends
and reflects the sound waves back to you.
Yeah, it's the density of the air, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. for people who are unaccustomed to that, mm-hmm. We almost swear that the sound was coming from 20, 30 feet away, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. We always hear the railroad.
That's
that
right.
way, just as though the trains are coming right up the front walk.
In the winter, the trains move closer to you.
Oh, right? yes. Cross the river and they're right over with us.
Uh-huh. Or the jets are actually landing on your house and in fact are 2.5 or 3 miles away.
That's right. The plane noise is, now that you say that, I know I live by the airport, the plane noise is a lot worse in the winter. And that's sort of odd because I know there's much less flying, at least by small planes.
We can hear them in town, too. I'm sure you hear them now. And it is
very low.
And it's so they're right on your head when they start
up. I just enjoy so much listening to all of you this evening. It's like listening to people talk about something that's very, very interesting to me, and I suppose will go on being so for another 24 years.
I hope that you will continue to participate in this program. This is just a forum for the Fairbanks audience to sort of talk to each other in a way that's not always possible for us to arrange to do on a sort of weekly basis. And I hope that people start using this as just sort of time to get together after dinner and talk about things that we've done and are doing and
well,
are sort of
much.
Interested. So join us next week.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take another call. You're on the air. Thank you for being patient.
Oh, we're always patient.
Oh, good.
68 to 69 was not the winner to bring your wife up and say, this
oh,
is the winner we're going to live in Fairbanks.
It's Chuck Slaughter.
Sue Ann might know that. But I thought of another harbinger of letting you know when it's really winter is when Ellen will accept a ride home after the concert.
I thought that was you.
It was.
Normally you refuse all offers
all right,
of rides.
All right, now you're talking to a snowman now.
Is that right?
<Hydraulics. laughs>
No, I didn't have anything relevant to say, but enjoyed having you all on the air.
Oh, thank you.
And ask Sue Ann what the relation is between winter in Fairbanks and winter Deerfield in Southeast. Talk about that a while. Later.
You spent some time in Southeast?
No, I've spent some time on the computer analyzing the snowfall patterns in southeastern Alaska.
Oh, that is one thing I was going to ask you. Someone insisted that the Gulf Stream is moving up. Now, I thought that was sort of crazy, but when
well,
I was...
there is a little problem in the Gulf Stream's in the
not
Atlantic
the Gulf
Ocean
Stream.
On the other side of the...
No, no, maybe not the... Well,
Japan...
they said the Gulf Stream, but the Japan Current. Is that
Kuroshio?
You tell me. I'm not the expert you are.
The Gulf Stream isn't headed this way.
Well, you know, odd changes are in the air.
Well, I haven't really been following the sea surface temperatures. It is true that if there is something or another that is likely to give you some clue about the coming winter, the sea surface temperatures are okay. Among the most likely things. As I said, I haven't been keeping up with it. We've just finished up a period of very anomalous sea surface temperatures for about the past 18 months because of the El Nino.
Ah, yes, here we go with the famous El Nino. I knew after we got over the psychic squirrels we'd get to the El Nino.
The little boy.
Well, the El Nino is a little more scientific
okay,
than the psychic
squirrels.
Okay,
would you like to explain this to us?
Well, basically, under normal circumstances, there is cold water off of the western coast of South America, fairly near the equator. Okay. This is because it's upwelling. It's coming up from quite deep where it's cold. And occasionally, the winds that maintain that upwelling die down. Warm water flows back into the area from farther west. And you, as far as the local residents are concerned, you have a disaster. This is an area with very low rains. You suddenly may come up with torrential rains. The houses aren't built to be rained on. The change in the temperature and the lack of nutrients in the upwelling water tends to kill off large numbers of fish, which in turn tends to kill off the seabirds. Also, this change in the sea surface temperature leads to changes in the way the atmosphere behaves. We don't understand all of those changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the last 18 months has been one of the most intense El Niños on record, and it's just finally dying down. And may have had something to do with odd weather the last 18 months or so.
Do you think we have had odd weather the last 18 months or so here?
On a global scale, yes. I don't know that it's been all that odd here.
We always
haven't
have
noticed.
Odd weather.
I mean, yeah, it's normal for it to be odd here.
Right. Okay, but on a global scale, weather patterns have been that the heat, the extreme heat waves that were in the East Coast and the Midwest, that's, you think,
it
partly
be.
Related? It could be. From what little you know, are there any predictions about this particular winter?
I haven't really been following them. I should have checked to see if the
right.
winter... See, I don't think the seasonal, the three-month forecast is out yet for the winter.
What kind of a track record did they have anyway? I mean, is there any point in is there any point in reading it?
I think it's slightly better than flipping a coin.
Because it was like the almanac.
The farmer's almanac. You don't have that here.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't. But I should have brought it in.
We're certainly due for a cold winter.
We are due for it.
Right. We have not had a winter with a normal amount of 40 below and colder weather since 75, 76.
I see.
Something put it off another year.
Do you think men grow heavier beards maybe here in winter? Has anyone thought of that correlation?
No.
I mean, beards are bushier perhaps when we're going to have a heavy, hard winter.
Go around stroking some beards and see if you can tell whether they're getting bushier.
Well, I don't think my dogs know anything. They're all shedding.
Well, maybe they do.
Maybe we're in for a mild one. Let's hope so. Again, our audience, our number is 474-5044. Please, if you have any nonsense to add to all of this, please call us up. Don't leave us alone here in the studio. 474-5044. Okay, so it's not really clear what kind of predictor the sea surface temperature is, but it does cause instability.
Yes, you could put it that way.
And
there are people studying the effects, but I haven't tried to follow it that closely.
When did this correlation occur? Is this corollary is just a sort of recent thought?
Well, it's a fairly obvious thing when you stop and think about it, because the ocean is the big reservoir of heat on this planet. And the weather is driven by the fact that it's warm at the equator and cold at the poles. So if you change the driving force, you're going to change the weather.
Okay.
And because of that huge heat reservoir in the ocean, that's the easiest way to change the driving force.
And what would some of the reasons for the temperature to change be of the water temperature?
Well, this is one of the things that makes it difficult, because the changes in the atmosphere then turn around and change the sea surface temperatures.
I see. Yes. It's not one thing alone, folks. No simple answers here. Okay, we have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. No simple answer maybe is what you're going to say here, too. But a minute or two ago, someone said we're due for a cold winter. I've been saying that for years just because I feel like it's Alaska and I'm going to get one real soon. And in my memory, there hasn't been a real devil of a winter since 75. So, does one of the experts, one of the people who's been here for 30 years, have any reason why we're due for a cold winter? I mean, couldn't we just be changing, or why are we due for a cold winter? Why do I say this all the time?
Why do we feel we need to be punished? We're having too good a time.
I just don't think that I know any reason why. I hope that they will stay, the cold weather will stay away.
You're happy with the weather that we've had in recent years?
Yes, I haven't thought it was too bad.
You don't think it's necessary for it to be 40 below every day in order to qualify as a decent...
You know, and sometimes I think, now if the temperature drops, I think, well, good, I'll stay home and get my work done. It doesn't make any difference. You go out and do the same things in cold weather or not.
But I think it's much easier than it used to be. Maybe the weather is just as cold, but... Remember when all the clothing was so heavy and the boots were heavy and you trudged. And now with down and all these fancy...
Moon boots.
I don't have those yet. But I mean all these other man-made linings of clothing is so much lighter. And prettier, too. I was thinking today, all the pretty hats you see around, instead of those old things we used to, all that GI surplus stuff. And cars, it's easier to get around. I mean, because of the lightweight oil, I guess, and that we don't have square tires anymore the way we used. No. You don't know about square tires?
I do know about. I had a
if you're out in the
tires.
Country, you probably do.
I remember.
And
We have plug-in heaters now.
Yeah. Yes,
the cars
yeah.
start when and it's cold.
Yeah. When I was first here, why people just put their cars up, they would block, you know,
that's
put them
right.
on blocks.
That's right, you didn't use them.
I didn't use
and
them.
And if you wanted a cab, you called the night before, and you still waited 2 hours the next morning.
Hope your daughter married someone who worked at the cab company.
Yeah.
Have a little in. We have another caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just thinking one of the way we punish ourselves at times. One of the things that probably makes winter the most uncomfortable is just how mechanized we've become. And, you know, when things tend to break down, and mm-hmm. when we can avoid those times when things are breaking down, things go okay.
Right. Metal does less well with extreme cold, it seems, than human bodies.
Mm-hmm.
or dogs' bodies in the case of... were there a lot of dog teams in the streets of Fairbanks when,
yes, they
when
used
you were
them
first
quite
here?
A bit. And I can remember Bill Hunter telling about driving the children by the dogs' team. They lived down the river, mm-hmm. and he would drive the team to school, and take his two children, everybody else is along the way in the dog sled.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that way, our expectations for how long it's going to take us to get somewhere, what kind of adversity we have on the way, all those things are sort of extra frustrations now, because we think with some of this modernization that we can do things in a normal 9-to-5 expedient way. Did you make a lot more allowances when you were teaching school years ago for attendance and tardiness, or...
Always took longer to put the clothes on than to go and catch the bus.
Oh,
was that quite an ordeal getting the kids dressed?
Oh yes,
to get out?
Together and find all the mittens and I mean the little kids will
stand at the door to be sure that they had their mittens on and their boots on and fastened.
Mm-hmm.
And
I imagine that's still a chore for teachers these days.
Yes.
Kids have some kind of incredibly bizarre thermostats.
I think Velcro must have made a difference, don't you?
Other places, the big discovery is Saran, and in Fairbanks, it's Velcro.
but do they still wear bread bags on their feet under the boots?
What are bread bags?
Plastic bread bags. It's much easier to put your boots on if you have bread bags.
For the slide.
They slip right in. Mm-hmm. And I remember a new boy coming in, and he was having a dreadful time with his boots because they just didn't go on, you know. I said, well, here, try one of these bread bags. He said, I wondered why all the kids had bread bags sticking out of their boots.
Some secret society. What were the clothes like back in the 30s and 40s, just sort of heavy quilted things
and alpaca mm-hmm. linings, yeah.
More furs mm-hmm. at that time?
Yes, they
were heavy.
They had fur caps.
Fur parkas were mm-hmm. heavy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you heat the schools at that time?
Well, they had coal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a furnace in the main school, mm-hmm. a coal-burning furnace, and then after a while they put it on steam line. Ran the steam line that far out.
Mm-hmm. Someone told me in the 60s that there was some, maybe again back to your, I'm sorry, I have a short memory here, 68. Was that a particularly severe winter?
68, 69 was. That's
where they had a coal shortage and something happened with the train coming from up south, and there was a real coal shortage in town. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that either.
No. Do any of our listeners...
Things used to happen to the power plant.
Do any of our listeners remember that? A major mm-hmm. coal shortage in Fairbanks sometime in the 60s? And they're really... This person, as they recalled, mm-hmm. they were starting to really worry about a lot of people who were reliant mm-hmm. on coal heat. And one can really ill afford to lose your heating source when it is that cold. I mean, it's truly dangerous.
I would guess that if it was one of the cold winters, it might have been 64, 65 rather than 68, 69,
okay.
because I think that the reliance on coal had gone down quite a bit mm-hmm. for home heating by 68, 69.
Okay, at mm-hmm. one point, Fairbanks area was fairly heavily reliant on coal for
coal
heat.
Coal and wood.
Mm-hmm. Coal and wood.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then they started putting in oil furnaces.
The old main school, the first old main school, burnt down in 33. I read today mm-hmm. in the archives. Why did that fire start?
I don't know. It started, I think, during Christmas vacation. I wasn't here then, so, but I remember having my brother or my sister, either one, had sent a paper home telling about the fire.
And you came in the fall after that.
Yes.
And they were sort of making do with the Moose Lodge and the...
They were building the main school when I came.
Uh-huh. So you were one of the first teachers in there.
It seems to me there used to be many more fires.
Things were always burning. Yes.
And the NC whistle would blow, you know, and a certain number, like four blasts would be one part of town, and you'd think, oh, well, I don't live there, or something. Yes.
It's very difficult to fight a fire when it's that cold.
Yes. Some of the big fires downtown were terrible.
Oh, the co-op, remember?
And then before the co-op, it was a corner just beyond there, that is, to the west. And there was a Smith's Hardware, and they had a lot of paint. And, the paint cans were exploding, and it was awfully, awfully bad. When the co-op, or I guess it was when that burned, I was living in the Nordale Hotel, and people... into the room and said, are you moving out? You know, people were carrying their things across the street to the Lathrop building. And I said, no, I feel perfectly safe.
almost next door to me.
Did you know a man named Baker Forbes?
Forbes Baker.
Or Forbes Baker.
Yes,
he's
fine.
I was reading an account he was talking about. He was getting a haircut across the street when that fire occurred, and he remembers seeing it start and described it as being a really wild experience. Happened to be right there. So you aren't going to predict for us what kind of winter this is going to be. There's no scuttlebutt around geophysics.
It's going to be another great winter.
No, I blew it so badly last winter.
Wasn't
it? My mouth shut.
I was going to say, last year when I was up there, weren't there all kinds of little graphs around the elevators predicting a really bad one last year?
Right, and that was mine.
Oh, those were yours. And no, it was not, in fact, a bad winter at all.
Right. On the whole historical record, that high snowfall, early in the winter, low temperatures is one of the best correlations I've come up with. But last year was just an exception.
Okay, this is a sort of game that meteorologists play based on things that occurred in past winters, and then you sort of graph them, early snowfall, mean temperatures, so on, put all those things together and try and come up with an equation. Is that correct?
Well, it's not quite an equation, but what happens is that the kind of airflow that tends to bring in the heavy precipitation tends to evolve into that flow down from the north that gives us our really cold weather. And last winter it did that, but it didn't stay from the north. Mm-hmm. We just had a very short period, and then it went around to the south again.
Mm-hmm. So, in fact, it was, a sort of average winter, or actually a mild one?
It was a mild one.
A mild one.
We only had about 3 days below 40 below.
Okay, I see your graphs here because she has some graphs in the studio. The 50s were fairly mild also?
Some of them. I've only got from 56 on plotted.
Do you remember the 50s, Rosamond, Ellen?
The only one that I've got
over here.
Do you remember them? I mean, does anything stick out in your mind about the weather then?
No.
It looks kind of blah. I have down here the list of the 10 coldest and the 10 warmest winters in the last 40 years, and there is only one that was in the 50s on either list.
So maybe we're in a...
So the 50s were just kind of a blah period.
Like a period we have... again, audience, our number is 474-5044. Somebody out there must have had a miserable winter experience in the 50s.
They've
left.
Well, as a matter of fact, the coldest December in the last 40 years was in 1956, so it's not hopeless. I think what it comes down to on the figuring we're due for a cold one is the fact that if you look back to about 1904 and plot up all of the winter temperatures, you don't get trends. You get a cycle sort of a thing where you'll get a period of warm winters and a period of cold winters and a period of warm winters and a period of cold winters and so on. This period of warm winter seems to have gone on long enough that you really don't expect it to last much longer.
Although it seems...
Well, it's not like a rabbit cycle, is it?
No. It's probably a little bit looser than that. A little longer cycle, too. It seems to be 15, 20 years somewhere along there.
And how long is the rabbit cycle?
Seven, is it?
six, seven. It varies a bit.
And has nothing to do with the weather patterns.
Oh, maybe it does.
It probably does, and that if you have a severe enough winter, you're going to kill off enough some of the rabbits.
I thought that was wet springs.
Well, I'm okay. Not sure what kills off rabbits, but I'm sure the weather has something to do with it.
Okay, here we are, audience, killing off all your theories, 474-5044. If you have any near and dear weather theories, now is the time to get them in before we've laid them all to rest once and for all here. You have your chance, 474-5044. So do you ever spend the winters, now that you've put in all this tremendous number of winters in Fairbanks, do you spend the winters outside at all?
No, I went out the year I retired, and in February, the 1st of February, and I was perfectly miserable out there. You know, it was supposed to be warm enough so you go swimming in Arizona and California, and it wasn't. It was, and I'd rather be home in the snow.
What was it like?
It was colder. It wasn't what I thought would be fun.
You were going south. You thought it should be.
Everybody said, "Bring your swimming suit. You know, it's going to be nice and warm, and you'll enjoy the warmth." And then my friends in Tucson said, "Well, in January and December, it was just lovely, but." When February came around, it was cold, and I just decided.
So that was your one experience.
I have gone out other times too, but I would rather stay home in the winter time. It's easier to take care of your house than to leave it to someone else. I like to go out in the summertime. That's what's been my life. You know, winter here is at school, and then going out in the summer to go to school or visit your family, and so or take trips. So in the summer. I prefer to go out and then stay in here. I like the winter weather. I like the snow and ice.
I think you do get used to it. I notice that I'm telling people who are newly arrived in the Fairbanks community that it's not so bad, in fact, that you get used to it. And I notice that I'm wearing less and less winter clothes as the years that I'm here progress. They all made fun of me the first year. I just couldn't put enough stuff on, and now a fairly light jacket's all right for this.
40 below will be shirt sleeve weather later on, you know?
Well, I've never quite gotten to that point. Now, after a week at 40 or 50 below, when it gets to 20 below, yes, that's shirt sleeve.
Well, all right. Okay. All right.
I wonder if.
Perhaps I exaggerated.
Newly arrived people are probably listening to this saying, oh, for sure. Right. But it's true. People do wear T-shirts. If we've had a long sort of extended 40 below, 30 below period, it warms up to zero. It's like a real.
But at the beginning of the year, now when it goes below zero, that'll seem horrible. But then we can console ourselves by saying, well, later on that will seem so warm.
Okay, here we've got a caller who probably stepped on a theory, but we'll find out. You're on the air. You're on the air. Whoops, here we go. You're on the air.
Yes, I seem to feel that everything is relative, actually. I find that what affects people in Fairbanks at 50 or 60 below is about the same thing that affects them in Anchorage at 10 or 20 below, and that your car won't start. The house is the plumbing's frozen up. And I found that as I moved farther south, when I got down to New Orleans, for example, last winter, it was the coldest winter in New Orleans in 22 years. The first year that had snow in New Orleans in 22 years. And they had the same problems. Everything was frozen up. Their cars wouldn't start. The plumbing was frozen. You know, so it's all around.
Yes.
Well, it's the climate you build for.
Well, you think what we can do to keep our pipes freezing from here, you'd think they'd apply just a little bit of that instead of running all the plumbing on the surface.
No, but they don't, because the average temperature, of course, is above freezing.
So they're not prepared for it.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's true. It is relative. And now you think that these, Rosamond and Ellen, do you go out much in the winter, either?
We take a winter vacation every winter, but we go skiing.
Thank you, Colin. You go to some
people
place.
People say, why don't you go to Hawaii? Or, no one go there. We like snow.
Well, everybody, in fact, it's probably, actually, a lot of people go out skiing in the winter so that you don't go to uncrowded places. You probably have to put up with crowds. as well, but there's something about going
but,
places.
Well, we usually go and ski during the week, and it's weekends that they're so crowded, most of them.
So here
we try different ones every winter.
I would. It's interesting that after you stay for a number of winters, it's not so important to go out. I think most people, when they first get here, it's real important to get out and get a break from the winter. I myself now, I've sort of become a little bit used to the cold, but the darkness still bothers me a little bit. How do you feel about that after all these years?
I don't mind the darkness, and I don't think that the winter seems as cold. When
there's light,
when there's sunshine, you know.
Oh,
even
yeah.
though it's you know, when the sun shines and those dark days just sort of vanish.
But excuse me. I was going to say, living in the city now, we have such marvelous street lighting. That's made a great difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It used to be terribly dark, and now it's so much better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but we do have now the ice fog. Which you didn't have then, right?
Yes, and we did have ice fog.
You did?
Even in the when the cars were put away, there would be ice fog from the heat from the building.
From the chimney, from the...
Right,
yes.
But of course, it didn't spread out as far.
No,
as it does now. I think that's the big difference.
Yeah, it's up higher, too.
Looking out over town when I was here on the hill, and you could just see there was a...
Like a lake.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, we saw some... mirages looking out over in the wintertime.
Oh, yes.
Oh, those are still visible on the campus.
What are they?
Oh, the mountains where there aren't any.
You will see the tops upside down above themselves.
We saw minarets and mosques,
beautiful.
And then one Sunday I was skating down the road, you know. We had a skating rink here, but I just started sliding down the road on my skates, and out over the valley it looked as though there might be a waterfall, but it was like fire. It was very interesting.
Who needs to go south?
Well, I know. Well, that's it. There's so much to do here in the winter.
We have such wonderful programs, and
walking in the ice fog's an adventure.
Mm-hmm. You know, you never know who you bump into.
No, you don't. You meet everybody. Suave to the eyes. Ooh, who's that?
One of my fun experiences that I think about often was my second year, and I began to teach in town, and I don't remember what month it was, but it was still in that fall. It became very cold. I think it dropped down to 30 below, and I thought, oh, we're in for it now. Winter's coming, and we'll have 6 weeks of cold weather just as we had the year before. But the next morning, I woke up, and it was nice and warm. The temperature had changed during the night. And then a shorter time, it was when I lived downtown over the Caterpillar building. I came home from school, and it was about 30 below, 40 below, something like that, and had dinner, and then had to go back for a PTA meeting, and it was balmy as could be. It was up to 30, you know. Mm-hmm. It just changed in such a short time.
I know it really can do that. We flew out one winter, and it was 30 below here when we left the airport. And by the time we got to Denver, there was a weather forecast going, and someone said, Fairbanks, 50 degrees. And we actually spent some time in the Denver airport calling to, surely that was a mistake. That was 80 degrees difference within 24 hours. What causes that sudden, just tremendous?
Well, when you have a situation where you've got the wind coming from the north, the winds blow around the earth from west to east. So if it's coming from the north here, it's coming from the south someplace else. And if that ridge or meander in the winds moves, suddenly instead of getting air from the north, you're getting it right from the south. We can get it straight from the Hawaiian Islands. The all-time record low temperature here in Fairbanks, 66 below officially, was within a week of temperatures above freezing on both sides of it.
That's a tremendous temperature shift for us to adjust to 90 degrees.
Yes, and this seems to be typical of winters that have extremely low temperatures. You see these tremendous oscillations.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't always work that way. 64, 65, for instance, just got cold and stayed cold. But a lot of the very cold winters show this very strong alternation between very high and very low temperatures.
That makes it so exciting to get up and look at the thermometer
through the dark and the ice on your window.
They used to talk about the Japanese current. Does that bring us warm weather?
Well, it's normally up here in the North Pacific. It's the Pacific equivalent of the Gulf Stream. Mm-hmm. I don't think it varies that much from year to year. Probably not
it's
as
still
much
there.
As the Gulf Stream does, yes.
Right. Well, I'm glad we got that straightened out for our audience. We're the Japanese current, the Gulf Stream's on the other side. I hope that's perfectly clear to all of you fifth graders out there. Forget the first part of the show. Japanese current is what we're dealing with. Okay. I think that we're almost coming to the end here. Everyone I called to try and come on this program with me suggested three friends. So I hope that everyone who's out there listening tonight will call me up with the name of three more friends that they can suggest should come on. And then at the same time you call me and give those three friends' names to me and their phone numbers, you will call them up and encourage them to come on the show. Because wasn't this easy, Rosamund?
Yes, it was fun.
Right? This wasn't
I
difficult.
I learned a lot.
Aren't you glad I persuaded you?
And Ellen, wasn't this better than looking at us through the glass to be here?
Oh, yes. She I'm was so just, glad you let me in.
She was just going to come to keep us company, and now she found that she said she didn't know anything about winter. When I first called you up, remember you said, I'm sure you want someone who's been here more winters than I
yes,
have.
Yes, yes.
And I said, well, how many have you been here? And she says, well, only 34. So, and thank you for bringing all this information. I guess what we've, in summation, what we've found is that there's no way to predict unless someone in our audience has some last second thoughts on this and they are going to say that we're wrong on this, but we don't have any way to predict that there isn't any real clear pattern, as you found out last year, right?
Right.
Much to your chagrin, did you take some ribbing for that?
A little.
A little, but good-naturedly. And that we really don't know what it's going to be like this winter.
Right.
We'll just have to
It'll
wait and see.
It'll be a good winter.
It'll be a good winter. Okay. I hope that it will be a good winter, and I hope that this audience is going to help me with this program to make it a better winter for me. And we'll all have a way, no matter how cold it gets, if we sort of keep tuned to KUAC and people call in a lot to this program and suggest that their friends come into the studio and talk with me, then we'll have a way at least communicating. I hope that we can get together this particular group sometime toward the end of the winter and see what we thought about it. See how we fare.
If we survive.
If we survive. I imagine we'll survive.
Of course.
Just a question of how cold we are on the way. So the Home Fires Radio Show, I'm going to try and get guests who have a lot of skills. I think Fairbanks has a very disproportionately large number of handy citizens that have a lot of skills that they'd like to share with the other listeners. I think that the oral tradition in Fairbanks is very much alive. I think people learn things from each other by watching and by sharing and by doing things together. And I think that we need to talk about that. Sometimes people who do things don't know each other and don't happen to meet each other, and this is one way we can sort of come together. And if you, the audience, have any suggestions for topics, I'm going to have some people on talking about log cabin building and quilting and some weaving people and dog mushing people and so on. But if the audience has any suggestions about what they would like us to talk about, and anyone who would care to volunteer and come in and talk about their favorite skills or pastimes, I would really like to hear from you. And you can call KUAC-FM during the day and leave a message for me. And the number is 474-7491, right, during the day. And if no one has anything else to offer, you have any final thoughts here before we go?
No, I was just thinking your theme song should be Keep the Home Fires Burning. You don't even know that, I bet. Do you?
Yes,
I won't
yes,
sing
fact,
it.
I have. Isn't that...
It's from World War One.
Is it from World War One?
Oh.
No, that's quite all right.
Fire's burning while your hearts are yearning.
Sounds like a great one.
Oh, the boys are far from
home. Oh, your feet are very cold.
I dream of home.
It sounds like we really do need to find that one. That would be much more appropriate for this show. If anyone out there has that song, or maybe we could just record it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that for you. We'll get this together and we'll do a recording for the audience for next week. We're looking forward to having you join us next week on Home Fires. This is Patty Kostelic for KUAC. Our producer was Carla Tonella. Have a nice evening.
You're listening to Stereo 105, KUAC FM in Fairbanks. The time is 8 o'clock. Tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, President Ronald Reagan will hold a news conference, and KUAC FM will broadcast National Public Radio's live coverage of that event. That's tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. Adventures in Good Music will air at approximately 3:30 following the news conference, Jazz at the Institute at 4:30, and Radio Reader will air tomorrow afternoon around 5:30. Once again, that's a live broadcast of President Reagan's news conference, tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, right here on KUAC.
From Minnesota Public Radio.